In 1997, John Van Beesbroek was the leading goaltender for the Eastern Conference in the NHL All-Star Game, and in 1998 represented Team USA in the Olympic Winter Games in Nagano, Japan. John played his first NHL game at the age of 18 with the New York Rangers and recorded his 300th NHL win on December 27, 1997, becoming the 15th goaltender in NHL history to reach that milestone. Although life appeared to be smooth on the surface, the Van Beesbroek home experienced significant anxiety with the suicide of John's older brother, as well as the challenges his wife Rosalind faced raising three sons, including a child with attention deficit disorder. This is their story.
Hi, my name's John Van Beesbroek, and this is my wife Rosalind. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. It was fun growing up in Detroit. Despite what you hear about Detroit, it was a great place. And I grew up with two brothers and two parents that were immigrants from other countries. My father is from Belgium, and that's where we get the long last name of Van Beesbroek, all 13 letters of it. And my mother was from Italy, and they both didn't speak English when they came over to the country. I never got a chance to learn Italian or Belgium because the common language in our family became English. I grew up and did all kinds of stuff. I was an altar boy, and we went to church on the weekends and had lots of fun with a lot of friends, but at an early age, took a liking to a sport called hockey, but I also liked baseball too. And we played a lot of games together, and eventually my brothers, who were both older than me, found a home for me, and that was in the net because they always wanted to beat me up. So then, which eventually led to shooting things at me. I guess that's where the goalie in me came out.
I'm from Sault Ste. Marie, which is a small town in northern Ontario, Canada. And my parents are both also from out of the country. They're both from England. And I grew up knowing that winter meant walking through tunnels. That's what the streets became, and that they cut the snowbanks down periodically through the winter because they got to be 10 feet and more, so some of you possibly can relate to that. And that summer brought in the animals, and we had bears in our backyard and moose sometimes and police escorts on the way to school if the bears got out of hand, and it was an exciting way to grow up.
Well, hockey, as I mentioned to you, became something that everybody played in the streets and in backyards, and eventually midgets, which is the age of 15 to 16-year-old, became a very serious time in my life because we went and played in tournaments. And in this one tournament in particular, they lost my jersey, and it had our names on the back. And I had to wear the name of our other goalie on the back of my jersey. And I went on, and I had a great tournament. We knew all the scouts were there from hockey teams and from colleges all around. What happened subsequently is that the Toronto Marlies, which is an Ontario Hockey League team, they drafted in the fourth round this other goalie. It wasn't me. This person who was the general manager of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds at the time picked up on it and said, no, this guy's got a long name. I know who he is. And he invited me to training camp. I went to training camp that year for the Sioux Greyhounds, and I made the team. And I was so naive at the time, and it was interesting because I was actually pitching in a baseball game when my mother showed up at the game, and she almost interrupted the game. I was like, "What are you doing? I'm pitching. Don't interrupt me right now." And she said, "No, this fellow called from Sault Ste. Marie, and he wants you to go to training camp there." And I was, totally excited about it, but I did want to go to college. My brothers both were in college at the time, and I wanted to follow in their footsteps. Also, I was seriously considering playing baseball. I mean, I loved baseball. At that time, my freshman year in high school, I had a real good year, and the coach came up to me at that time, and he said, "Well, that you're going to have to stop playing hockey if you want to play baseball." And I said, "Well, they don't conflict. I mean, the seasons, one's in the winter, one's in the summer." And he said, no, if you want to play baseball, you got to make a dedication to baseball. So I quit playing baseball and stuck solely to hockey. And off to training camp I went to this place called Sault Ste. Marie, way up in right above northern Michigan. And I'll tell you, it is the Great White North. I made the team, and we had a real good year. That year, I was 18 years old. After that year, I got drafted by the New York Rangers in the fifth round. So all of a sudden, I was this kid pitching in this baseball game to going up and playing 1 year in the Ontario Hockey League. And then all of a sudden, I was drafted by a professional hockey team. Boy, I thought things were really moving for me. I came back to play my second year with the Sioux Greyhounds, and I, at that time, was having a pretty good year, and there was a rash of injuries with the New York Rangers, and I was called up. So at 18 years old, I played my first NHL game. You know, what a pinnacle I thought that was. We won the game 2-1, and I thought, boy, I'm just doing it here, you know. They sent me back to junior, back to the Great White North, you know, for reasons I didn't really understand. But, you know, I accomplished something at that time, but I didn't understand. I mean, the next day they sent me back down and back to Sault Ste. Marie. It was in my final year in Sault Ste. Marie that I met Roz. And I was 19 years old at the time, and I definitely wondered why I got sent back to Sault Ste. Marie, and now I know.
Well, I might be Canadian, and hockey may be our national sport, but I didn't particularly care for it, and I knew nothing about it, even though Wayne Gretzky was, that's where he played, and that's about all I knew about hockey, was his name. But I met John, and he was American. That's the first thing that made him strange. He had an accent, and he dressed differently than the Canadian guys, and he had a big space between his teeth. He wore big glasses. He had a mustache. All those things were against him, but he was a nice guy. You know, he's a nice guy. He talked to me. He was kind to me. Eventually, he won me over. A mutual friend set us up, got us together, and how could I not like him? He actually saved me from being arrested one night with a false ID, and that was the beginning of the story.
And what a story it is. And after that, I had to wait. I wanted, actually, the following year to ask for Roz's hand in marriage, but I asked her, but I didn't have the courage to ask her dad. But eventually I did, and we had to wait for 3 years for Roz to finish school. So we had a long-distance relationship, which was very difficult. She was at school in at a Canadian university, and I was in New York. I was in New York living it up with a great career that was surging. At that time, you know, there was good things happening. You know, it was interesting to find out that when we eventually got married in 1986, the Rangers almost made the Stanley Cup final. You know, I really felt that I played a big part in that. And then we were married that summer, and, you know, for the next few years, we really thought that we had everything going our way.
It was like living a dream. It was like a fairy tale. We spent the first 7 years of our marriage there, dropped in the vicinity of New York at 22 years old, and John making a considerable amount of money for our age. It was amazing. We had our own home, and we had some nice cars, and we had a nice lifestyle, and we were invited to fancy parties, and life was great. Everything was very entertaining, and we were having a good time. And then our first child was born, and our second child was born. Well, that's when I knew that there was some difficulty with our first child, because I had comparison. We'll get more into that at a later time, but really, what more could a young couple ask for? Then after the third child was born, and during those years, I felt there was some kind of void in my life, and I approached John and said, you know, our parents gave us a base. They baptized us, and they took us to church, and they gave us that base, and We had taken care of the baptism for the kids, but we weren't modeling for them, taking them to church. And and John, it was like it was falling on dead ears. There was no response. And I dragged him to a few Bible studies at friends' homes, and even some marriage encounters, watching videos together. But we had no communication as a result of those. No change, no results or responses. It was still going nowhere, but yet I still felt a void. I don't think John felt that void that I did.
Basically, I thought everything was great. You know, those 7 years, you know, when our children were born, I thought that things were very busy, very busy. We had lots to do. My schedule was packed with games to play and places to go, and Roz was left home. I mean, I didn't really realize it at the time that, you know, it wasn't that much of a problem. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do when you're married, right? Leave your kids at home with your wife and go off and try to be as successful as you possibly can because you're the breadwinner. Well, one day we were on a vacation and heading back from a place on the far east end of Long Island in East Hampton, and we were heading back, and Roz said to me, she says, you know, I think that we should go to church on Sunday and restate to God that we want him to be in our lives and model to our children how important that was to us growing up. And I'm driving, you know, this fancy Range Rover at the time, and I'm going down, and I'm thinking, how crazy is, what is she talking about? You know, I have a tea time standing every Sunday morning. And I have all these things that we can do. We can, you know. But at that time, you know, I was totally against it. And I was totally against going to these marriage encounters where once it was the first one that we went to. It was at a teammate of ours. I walked in the room and I thought, you know, it was great dinner. We walked into the, you know, to the family room, and I saw a Bible sitting on the chair, and I stopped, and I went, uh-oh, this wasn't in the picture. I thought we were just going to talk about our marriages and, you know, what our kids do and, you know, who threw up on who this week and stuff like that. And I became scared. I really did. I felt chills, and I didn't want to be there, and it was a scary, scary feeling for me. But we went to several. The more we went, the more it became a nice social gathering, and I looked at it that way, and I played along. I played along real well, but I did learn some things. But I still wasn't convinced because I was growing this great family with three beautiful little boys and a beautiful wife, and I thought that our marriage was going just fine.
But actually it wasn't. John and I had your standard challenges along the way, disagreements, arguments, and vying for position and who got the most personal time. And, you know, when we had arguments, I would say we didn't resolve them. We just kind of brushed them under the rug. I did not like arguments or disagreements, so the sooner they were over, the better. And I would say I didn't even have a base of relationship with my children because I didn't even really want to spend time with them. To me, I didn't feel confident in what I was doing, and it was basically get them through the day and get them in bed. I didn't really enjoy being with them. Especially the oldest one, who was a particularly difficult child, it was very challenging for me, and I was not fulfilled in what I was doing. And yet I had three children, and I was married. But where to go from there?
And I certainly was busy enough not to notice the fears that Roz had. That time grew to a point where we hit a crisis in our lives. It's interesting to recall that time in our lives and particularly in my life, because I wasn't the most humble guy, not at all. You know, there was a time when my career was coming to an end in New York, and I knew it. I spent a good 10 years there and enjoyed a lot of the things, but we were on a downward spiral that year. And to complicate matters more, my brother, who was my oldest brother, who I looked up to dearly because he was a goalie and I was a goalie, he was the first guy that beat me up, but he was also the first guy to put his arms around me with a big hug and say, "Shh, Mom and Dad are coming." But at that time, he slipped into a depression, and I didn't really know what depression was at that time. I thought I knew a lot of things, but you know, as you grow a little bit older, a little bit more older, you realize that how little you really do know about yourself and about your family. And I stopped home on a road trip. We played in Minnesota, and I stopped home, and I saw him in a state that was trance-like. And I was scared, very scared, and I went to the hospital that he was at, and I went in to see the doctor, and the doctor says, "You can't go in there." And I said, "Well, how come? That's my brother. I want to go visit my brother." He says, "You can't go in there. He didn't give me authorization to let you in there." And I said, "But that's my brother." He said, "John, wait a second. Let me explain something to you. Your brother doesn't want to help himself. And if he doesn't want to help himself, I can't help him." And I thought, whoa, at that time, he doesn't want to help himself. That was something that put off a light bulb in my head. But off I went. I had to go back and continue this this downward spiral in a season that came to an end. We missed the playoffs, so I was upset about that. And but I got a call from my mother one day, and it was she was crying on the end of the other end of the phone, and said that you know, your brother just took his life. And for me, at that time, I was you know, I wasn't surprised. And what a cold, empty feeling that was deep inside of me, that emptiness that I had, because I had no emotion. I was in all these motions that I was doing, but I had no emotion in my life. And that, you know, basically made me think about what the doctor said. If you don't want to help yourself, you know, you're not going to get better. And then with that, we were moving somewhere. We didn't know where, and it eventually ended up being Florida. And I think I understand now how emotional moves are. That was an emotional time in our lives, and personally an emotional time in my life, and a very empty feeling. So I carried a very empty feeling with me in moving all our stuff to Florida and having to start basically a new life. But what a new life it was.
Well, when we got down to Florida and it was time to enroll the kids in school, when I tried to enroll my 5-year-old, my difficult child that I've mentioned a couple of times, in kindergarten at a private school, they wouldn't accept him. And I called John and just was beside myself and really didn't know where to go from there. And I came upon the name of another school and called them, and they took me in immediately. And Ian, the oldest, was diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And phew, thank you. Thank you, Lord, for an answer to why I was having such a difficult time liking this child. But anyway, Ben, our second, he was registered for a preschool, and that preschool was a part of a school which was a part of a church also. So off they went to their respective schools with the baby at home, and I spent some time at Ben's school, the 3-year-old, and met some incredibly nice people. You have to understand the state I was in. I was so distraught. I was physically and emotionally and mentally distraught over the move, and I got sick from the stress of it. And just coming from the base where I was about being unhappy with myself anyway, not having that self-esteem, feeling like I had fooled everybody up to that point anyway about the kind of mother I was and the kind of wife I was, that things spiraled downhill quickly for me. And when I found these people and there was just this incredible love that surrounded them and the church and the school, and they invited me to start attending church, and I did. And all I can say is it was wow. Like, I heard the message the first few Sundays and could not believe and wondered, where's God been all this time? Where have these words been all this? I've never heard this before. This is in the Bible? I went to church and I went to Sunday school. I don't recall any of this. And it was spoken in a way, and my pastor had the gift to communicate, and the Lord opened my ears at the right time and opened my heart, and it was a breath of fresh air, and it was like these big giant arms coming around me and giving me the assurance that I was going to be okay. And I just grasped on to these people and onto this environment, and they became my support system. I went on from there for a year and attended the church and attended Bible studies on Sundays and started with the moms group there and got very involved with the school. And at the same time, through our oldest son's school, they told us that if we wanted to help our child, we needed to go to marital counseling, and we needed to get our relationship in order. But I literally felt like I was a volcano, and I looked quiet and calm and serene on the outside, but yet I was filled with fear and anger and frustration and resentment most of all toward John. And he was so successful, and he had accomplished so many things, and the achievements were piling up, and I did not know what my purpose was, and I didn't feel I had achieved anything. And motherhood did not have a great meaning to me until I heard it preached in the church and through the Bible studies and parenting courses, and suddenly I realized, wow, I have the most important role any person could ever ask for, and I have been given three incredibly precious gifts, and they're my responsibility. And thank you for coming into my life at this point and letting me know, John.
At that time, I'm going to back up a bit and go back to when we moved, and I was back in New York packing up the last stuff in a U-Haul, ready to drive a truck with a U-Haul down with a dog down to Florida. The last phone call I made to was Roz, and she was going there to get the kids in school because they started school there earlier, and it was August, and I figured, oh, okay, this sounds pretty easy. We're going to move down there. I'm going to get the kids enrolled in school. That's no big deal. And then I'm going to be able to meet the guys and be able to, you know, basically train with everybody. And then, boom, we're going to start in this great new adventure. Well, like I said, the last call I made was to Roz, and I called her up, and she was kind of sniffling on the other end of the phone. I was like, what's wrong? I said, how'd it go today? You enrolled Ian into kindergarten. She goes, he wasn't accepted. I pulled the phone away from her. I was like, how could you not be accepted into kindergarten? What's this all about? And then she began to explain the process of what she had to go through, of taking him to a school to be tested, and finding out that he had ADD, and that he'd have to go to a specific school to meet that need. So life's challenges began right there and then. But I still had the fears and the questions inside that empty hole that was left from losing a brother. But we had to go on. And when we went down there, it was quite a time, because it was a time for hockey. It was new in Florida, and we were getting accepted like royalty. And, you know, at that time, I still said to Roz that, you know, I'll go along with her thing. She wanted to go to this great new school, and we'll go to church on Sunday. Sure, right. Sure, I'll play along. I'll play along. At that time, I started to see her change. And she actually started to really change, like, in a relationship with Ian, who could anger her very easily. And then she started to say that she was going to go to this mom's group that meets every Wednesday. And she started to take a Bible along with her. And I started to look and say, this thing's very interesting. And all this this work that was done in New York, and all this work that was being done at the church and school, was starting to really teach her something. And when she grasps on to something, she grasps on with all her might. Believe me when I tell you that. And she started sharing with me some of this great love that she was feeling. And I started to feel it. It was just rolling right off her, and it was rolling right on to me. And what a great feeling that was. And that empty hole inside of me was starting to feel little drips of something that was filling it up. And I didn't know what that was. On our team, we started to have chapels. At first, it was introduced as, just come to this chapel. Just come and listen to this chaplain. And, you know, it'll only be about 10 minutes. So, free invitation, I figured, I'll take it. And I came in and I listened, and I listened intently. And I started to hear words that were starting to affect me, affect these fears that I had, and they started to really feel strong. And Roz's gravitation towards this love and this caring church and all these new people in our lives was really starting to be fulfilling to me. I mean, I like them. I like the people at the church. I like the people at the school. I started to really like to hear the sermons on Sunday and pay close attention. Why was this all happening to me? This voice kept on going on in my mind. If you don't want to help yourself, then you're never going to get healed. You're never going to feel right. I started to have some questions about it myself, and I started to ask questions to the chaplain, and he came forth to me and started to explain things to me in a simple way. I never really heard really anything in church, I think, when I was growing up. I knew Christmas and Easter, and I knew some of the words that I had to say at confession. And I knew some of these things, but I really didn't know what Jesus really did. But I still had this problem and this hurdle, because I had three beautiful boys that I could hug at night and kiss them goodnight. I had a beautiful wife that I could love and hug and kiss. And as I listened to this, it was told to me that I have to put this God, this Jesus, first in your life. And I said, I cannot do this. How can I put somebody ahead of the people who I love and my family? I mean, I can't do that. I wrestled with this for quite a time. I read a bit, and I saw Roz starting to, what I call, gush with love, starting to really be the person that I married, with the same smile, with the same open arms, with the same unconditional love, no matter what was eaten in the house, no matter who put their underwear where. And I thought, this is very interesting. But I still couldn't do it. No way. Not me. I'm John, the strong hockey goalie that has this great successful career, that is excited to be in Florida and doing great things, and but I still couldn't put this Lord first in my life. And then this very influential day happened when I sat down with a team chaplain of ours. We just sat down for breakfast, and I just said that I'm still wrestling with the fact that I can't put this God first in my life. And the words came, as they came out of his mouth, I just felt an ease come over me because it made so much sense, and it went like this. He just said, you know, the Lord doesn't want to separate your life from your family. He doesn't want you to have a monarchy in your family. He just wants to share your love. He wants to be a part of your family. Just to share the unconditional love that his son shared with everybody when he came down and died on a cross for our sins. I thought to myself, he just wants to share? Boy, I can share. Putting up here, I don't know if I can do, but I certainly can share. And then for me, at that time, my heart opened up. I felt a peace that came into my life, that came into my wife's life earlier. But it wasn't until about 3 or 4 days later than that that we both went to bed, and we had something to say to each other, but we didn't know how to say it. Roz just looked at me and she says, you know, I've experienced a change in my life. I don't know if you've noticed. And I said, yeah, I've noticed. What, are you kidding me? She said, you know, I think that I've accepted Jesus Christ as my Savior and that he's the first in my life. And I don't know how you feel about that. And I just kind of looked at her and I said, you know what? I think I'm feeling the same way. And she was like, what? Are you kidding me?
And what a relief that is to have my husband there beside me and know that he's had the same realizations as I have. And it was a different experience for both of us, but it was a void that was created in our lives, and it was a void that was filled by the same Christ. And I was talking to our son Ian today and asked him, of course, if I could share how I had felt about him, which is not a very nice thing for a mother to say about her son, but he said, sure, Mom. He goes, God's done wonderful things in our lives. And I had said to him, you know, the reason I didn't love you as, you know, as best I could, and the reason I didn't like to spend time with you, Ian, is because you weren't perfect. And I said, and I wasn't perfect either, so that's why I couldn't love myself. And that's what Christ did for me. He told me that I didn't have to be perfect, that he loved me just the way I am, and that I was specially created as a unique individual. And once he taught me how to love myself through his love, then I was able to love you and your brothers and your dad wholeheartedly for the first time in my life, and to love my family and each person I meet up with. There's a difference in how I look at people. And some basic realizations being that, you know, God has helped me to go beyond my comfort zone. He keeps helping me step out into those fears that I've had for a long time. And that he's taught me that there are absolute truths and there are rights and wrongs to live by, and that there's a blueprint for life, and it's all there in one book, and it's just amazing that the process continues on from day to day, month to month, and year to year, and there's something new to be learned, but it's all there for you.
After we basically shared these thoughts, the influence that we had on on each other was immense. And I think that I never really shared Roz's fears, and she never really shared my fears. And once we were able to hop into each other's lives once again and to experience a spiritual rebirth, things became to be more clear. Whether it was handling our children with a behavior program in our family, or whether it was for me to take this new feeling out onto the ice with me. I want to share with you how influential that is, because it is a special thing to feel peace when you're in what I call combat. A lot of the time, everything's happening so fast. I always looked at the other Christian athletes as being stereotyped as being weak, fragile, and they're going to turn the other cheek, until I found this newfound spirit in me and how strong I became and how much it influenced me in a feeling of peace. And at my position as being a goaltender, you can't go out there and hit anybody. Very rarely do you come in contact with anybody. And, you know, you're the final line. You know, you're a hero or a goat. And I hate to put it in those terms, but it happens to be that way sometimes. But I wanted to just be myself. And I saw results in me starting to happen just by seeing myself a little bit more clearly. But I saw myself through the eyes of God. And what a humbling feeling that is. But that influence on the ice led me to take little pieces, little thoughts with me, whether it was a Bible verse or whether it was just something of strength that I could take out there with me. For an example, one verse that comes to mind that is very influential in me is Philippians 4:13. I can do anything through him who gives me strength. I can recall that phrase when I'm out there and concentrate on that, and it gives me such a sense of peace that I can go and perform and know that I can go out there and do the best I can, and if I fail, I fail. And I will learn by that, but in the eyes of God, that I've done the best I can. And that's what matters most. I mean, it's something to look back to yourself and feel and know that God has given you a skill and that he works through you to come in contact with others and provide you with a platform in which to do so, which brings me to wanting to share that with everyone here tonight. I must say that this free gift was offered to me, but I don't know how many times I turned it down, and that the Lord found me. I didn't find him. He found me. And how thankful I am for that is carried out through what I do on the ice. I find that as a very, very spiritual time out there. It's uncanny how close you become when you stand alone out there in front of thousands of people that on most nights aren't wishing you the best. But also the platforms that he's put in my lives, like being able to compete in the Olympics and go to Japan and experience a whole new culture. We went there and we failed miserably, but we were meant to go there to experience that. And it was okay. It was okay. For myself personally, I went over there and played all of 50 seconds. I have had a lot of people ask me, now, weren't you let down by that? Don't you think that you should have had more of an opportunity? I said, well, I did have an opportunity. I had 50 seconds worth, and I did as much as I could in 50 seconds. that the Lord would allow. But I also experienced witnessing the United States women's hockey team win a gold medal, which to me was an awesome sight, you know, to watch these 20 women come together to do this and be the first to do it and carry the flag around the ice. It just meant that we were being led to just witness that. Now, the time is with us now that we move on to new challenges. But I want to share that that when we move or wherever we go, it's my thought that with the Lord in my life, I'm always home.
John Van Biesbroek will return in a few moments with a prayer and some personal closing remarks that you will find helpful. There could very well be someone you know that would appreciate hearing John's story. Life story tapes are passed around many offices, neighborhoods, and among family members. So if you've enjoyed this tape, please pass it on. Now, here's John Van Biesbroek.
If you are interested in beginning your own personal relationship with God, may I help you with a simple prayer similar to the one Rosalind and I prayed? Prayer is simply talking with God. He is more concerned with your heart than your words. If our words help you communicate your feelings to God, please use them. Pray this prayer with me right now. Lord Jesus, I am not sure I understand everything, but I do know I need you. I open my life to you right now. I need your forgiveness. Help me to grow and change. Make me the person you created me to be. Thank you. If you have just prayed this prayer, I have several suggestions for you. You'll want to tell someone you trust and respect. Find a church where Christ is honored and the Bible is taught, and where you can make new friends who have made the same commitment. Talk with God openly about everything. Read your Bible every day. It's God's way of talking to you. If you don't have an easy-to-read translation, call 1-800-LIFE-STORY and request your own complimentary copy of the New Testament. You can also request other life stories that would encourage you. If you are not ready to respond to the things we have communicated, may we encourage you to continue exploring. God is more than willing to answer your honest questions. He is anxious to enter a personal relationship with you. Thank you for allowing Rosalind and me this opportunity to tell you about our own personal journey to God. We hope that your life will in turn help those around you.
According to Kingdom's free access policy, you may copy this recording. For quantity discounts or other life stories, call us toll-free at 1-800-661-1141. That's 1-800-661-1141.